Good afternoon. Let me officially welcome you to this seminar on nurturing an inclusive congregation and a minister's perspective on that this afternoon. My name is Tim Wood. I am development manager at Through the Roof, the Christian disability charity. I'm also the vice chair of the Churches for All network that's been involved in organising today's conference. Just before I introduce our speaker, Nick, just thought I'd give you a bit of a personal sort of way into the subject. I'm a father of four young, delightful children, and they love playing with Playmobil figures. I don't know if you know the Playmobil figures. And they just love acting out and role play with those figures. And just recently they've been using their Playmobil figures to act out church, which has been really interesting. So I've been watching them playing church with these little men and women and children figures. And in fact, one of the figures is actually in a wheelchair, so it's quite an inclusive Playmobil toy. But they act out the church service, and they do the singing, and they do the Bible bit, and then it comes the time for the children to leave to go to the groups. And everyone, all the Playmobil figures, exit the church building except for the minister and one dad. Now, I'm not sure what impression they have of church. It's not exactly how it works at our church. But I think they've got the wrong impression, or not really a full perspective of what church is all about. And I think if you, man on the street, goes along perhaps to many of our churches, they could get the wrong impression of what church is about. I think it's quite often generalising here, but white, middle class, older population, predominantly female. And yet in the Bible, I read about, it seems to be like a sort of rich mix of diverse people groups where everyone is included, accepted and valued. So how do we get to that point? And so I'm delighted that we've got a man with all the answers. Maybe a little bit too much pressure. But really pleased to have the Reverend Nick Cook this afternoon to lead us through nurturing an inclusive congregation. Nick is a Baptist minister from Market Harbour. He's been there for 7 years, and he came straight from training. And his previous job, he worked at the University of Leeds as a computing support officer. So he arrived into this church, populated by a number of people who worked at Torch Trust for the Blind, and his church has since attracted many people with sight loss to the church. So really pleased to welcome him to speak to us now. There will be an opportunity for questions at the end. Myself and co-host Karen from GoSign will be able to field the questions and direct them to either Nick or people who are here present who could contribute to the answers. But really pleased to hand over now. Thank you, Nick, for leading us.
Thank you, Tim. Good afternoon, everyone. Do you ever have imposter syndrome? The idea that you're doing something and somebody somewhere is going to find you out. Because I've listened to all the speakers, the excellent plenary speakers that we've had, and I've looked down the list of the people who are speaking at the other seminars, and they all seem to have a qualification to speak here that I don't have. And that is a personal experience of a disability. I have no disabilities that society would notice whatsoever. I have 20/20 vision. I have acute hearing. That occasionally means I lose conversations in background noise because my hearing's picking up the background noise. Annoyed my wife when she sent me for a hearing test and it turned out to be really good. I played squash the first time in 50 years a couple of weeks ago. I did really well. I came out alive. But I have four lovely children, none of whom have disabilities. I have a family, none of whom have disabilities. And so I feel slightly an imposter, speaking in a sense about disabilities when I don't have that experience. But on the other hand, I think potentially my presence here is important because the issue of dealing with disability in the church should not be left to people with disabilities. And I say that for two reasons. One, because my take on this is from a liberation theology perspective. Talk about that in a minute. But in liberation theology, it's often people outside the oppressed group who have some of the biggest impacts. You think of William Wilberforce, or Dr. Bernardo, or Trevor Huddleston, or Oscar Romero. People who identified themselves as groups but were able to form a link. But also because as a minister, I'm aware that I can be an agent of change. And in any of these situations, if you're not part of the solution, you are supporting the problem, even by doing nothing. And that's a huge challenge to me as a minister, and it's a huge challenge to anyone who's in leadership in the church. Now, I do have a slight nervousness in that if you're here as somebody with a disability who's not in leadership of the church, I really don't want you to go home and bash your ministers over the head with this. But nevertheless, it's a message that we need to hear. I'm also conscious that in a sense I'm preaching to the converted. And many of you will recognise the sorts of things I talk about or will be doing better. And maybe somebody should get me a slot on the main stage at Spring Harvest, and we can talk to the people who weren't going to be here. But nevertheless, what I think this is about is important. And it's not just about issues of people with disabilities. It's about including the whole Galatians lot, you know, the male and female, the different social class, the different races. My personal agenda when I came to the church was including all ages, because most ministers find all age services really, really hard to do. And I went through the thing, you know, should you have child church and teenage church and old people's church? No, we are the family of God and we belong together. So even if it's hard work, we're going to stick together and sort it out. Now, I did produce a handout, and I suppose I really ought to stick to it. Okay, how do you create an inclusive environment? Well, I think you need to address issues theologically. My route into this was that I was a student at Northern Baptist College. I did my training part-time, so I used to leave home for 6 weekends a year, go to college, have an intense weekend doing my studying or doing my lectures. I came home, I worked 3 days a week, I had the kids for a day a week, I did my church placement for a day a week, and then I did all my studying in the evening. My wife also worked 3 days a week, looked after the kids 2 days a week, did all her studying in the evening because she was training as a GP. And so I was fairly frazzled by the time we finished all of that. But as I was, part of my training, I did youth work with an inner city church in Leeds. And of course, if you do youth work, then you're sort of doing stuff that's energetic and stuff that's visual and cool and PowerPoint and iPod and all this sort of stuff. And so I was developing in my head, you know, well, we need to make worship exciting and visual and all this kind of stuff. And then I got a call to Market Harbour Baptist Church. And, you know, quite. And I encountered all these people for whom the visual stuff was going to be no use whatsoever. Oh, what do I do now? How do I actually make it inclusive? I was fortunate, and this is the grace of God here, that I was doing my assignment on liberation theology at the time I got the call. And liberation theology, which you may or may not have heard of, but it started off in communities in South America, and it's got a big history in South Africa as well, basically of reading the Bible and thinking about God from the point of view of people who do not have power, and then questioning the power structures that are keeping them in positions where they do not have power. And it was said quite explicitly on my course that it was an appropriate way to look at issues of disability. And so I thought, right, well, I've got a practical application here. And so I looked at issues in the Bible. I looked at thinking. I read The Disabled God by Nancy Iceland, and it is a seminal book. If you're going to do any theology in this area, you have to read that book. And I did my thinking through it. You have to do this. as our plenary speakers have already indicated, the Bible needs some careful handling when you look at it from a disability perspective. There is a lot of stuff that can be taken negatively. And I have to say personally that if you're going to take a literal interpretation of the Bible is inerrant and literally interpreted, you are going to have a problem. And actually, the reality is that we need to take Scripture seriously, and even people who say they take the Bible literally are still doing interpretations. So we've got to take Scripture seriously, because that's what we base our faith on. It's the Word of God, after all. But you need to apply your brain. You need to think about it properly. So you've got to go through those passages that talk about disability. I went through the passages that talked about blindness. About that Leviticus thing where anybody who's blind or lame or halt or whatever cannot approach the throne of God. The whole issue of the way the Bible uses images of darkness and light, where people in the light are with God and people in the darkness are not. And the way that actually a lot of the healing miracles on blindness are actually used more to demonstrate the spiritual blindness of scribes and Pharisees and people like that than they are about physical blindness. So there's a lot of stuff you can take negatively. There's also a lot of stuff that's very good. And again, John Hull has been referenced here. Two of the most transformative books I read were both by him. And again, you've got to deal with issues that you're faced with. I was faced with visual impairment, and so John Hull was my source for it. But On Sight and Insight is his diary of becoming blind in his early 20s. And so he had sight, he suffered sight loss, and he sort of chronicles, really, how life changes. And that taught me a lot about what life is like for blind people. Things like, for me, a nice day is something like this. Calm, cool, clear, sunny. He said for him, a nice day is where it's windy and raining, because on a day like this, you can't hear much outside. The moment it starts raining, your perspectives change. You can hear what's going on around you because it echoes off. In fact, he even got a tin shed built out the back of his house so that when it rains, he can sit there and enjoy all the sounds going on around him. It was things like, he says, a blind person becomes very focused on the body, because often that's all you've got. A blind person is very conscious of their body, but because they cannot see anything coming, he says people speak and touch out of nowhere and then disappear without warning. And then when he went into a room and wanted to speak to somebody, it was very difficult because you can't make eye contact. You don't sometimes even know whether they're there. He describes going to his first all-blind conference. And what's amazing, he's walked in this room and people were just going, John, John, are you there? John! And people would shout, because they can't see. And that taught me a lot. But it also taught me something else. And I'm going to risk a joke here, which I thought was funny for all the right reasons. But a teenage lad is in the pub. And after he's finished his drinking, he decides to go home. He gets up, he falls down. Tries again. Gets up, falls down. Gets up, falls down again. Eventually, somebody calls him a taxi. Taxi turns him out at home. He gets up, falls down, finally manages to scrabble into the hallway through the front door and climbs into bed and thinks, well, I really hope my mum hasn't heard me. Following morning, he's woken up by his mum looking absolutely furious. Says, you've been out drinking again. He says, I thought I was really quiet. How did you know? He said, the pub's been on the phone. You left your wheelchair behind again. Check your assumptions. Most jokes are based on assumptions. And as Chicken Little sang, I went ahead with my assumptions, and we all know what that can do. I made the assumption, having read John Hull's book, that of course what John Hull's experienced was true for all blind people. Duh. I then talked to members of my church who'd been blind since birth. Some of them said, well, the darkness light issue isn't an issue because I don't know what light looks like. I'm not aware I'm in darkness. So check your assumptions. I was talking to somebody at coffee time who said, I think he was talking about Eisen's book, and said, you know, but she says she's only talking about physical disability, which is really frustrating. I said, yeah, but people who've been written about and written off are very conscious that you can't write for somebody else. And so people who write about their own experience and only speak to their own experience and let others speak to their own experience. So even when you think you know, you don't. And so you've got to constantly check that and keep yourself humble, I suppose, in all of that. No, I'm watching my time. The other book, and this one, is great for a preaching series. In the Beginning There Was Darkness, also by John Hull. I think he publishes the SCM. He goes through the Bible and picks out biblical issues to do with blindness or light and dark, and interprets them. He loves Psalm 139, which he believes could have been written by a blind person, for it talks about God, to whom light and dark are the same. He talks about Samson. Samson, who, when he could see, completely fouled life up, but when his eyes were removed, could do the will of God. He talks about the prophet Ahijah, who is blind. And all sorts of things like that. Fantastic book. So, nurturing an inclusive congregation, we're Christians, we have to do the theology. Read stories. As I said, I read John Hull's story, and that was really educative. It completely transformed me. But don't assume. So which means you've got to listen to other people's stories. And particularly if you're going to be in some sort of pastoral responsibility or leadership in the church, go and listen to the stories of the people. It's not my experience. I can't make the experience up. And so you've got to stretch out and listen and hear and operate as far as you can in the compassion of Christ. Not in a patronizing or give them pity sense, but in a coming alongside, very much coming alongside. I think also, the problem with able-bodied like me is that because society tells me I'm normal, you've got to work against that. And you've got to, I think it's a recognition that if you assume able-bodiedness is normal, you tend not to see the amount of disability that there is. And I can't remember which speaker it was, and maybe it was Roy or John, who said earlier, you know, us able-bodied are only able-bodied temporarily. You know, we will all be disabled at some point, unless the Lord takes us first. And so, actually, it's recognition that this isn't unusual, this is normal. Yeah? Having some form of disability is normal. And actually, I have all sorts of disabilities that are far less visible. And so this isn't unusual, this is actually core to who we are and core to what we're about. Core to being the body of Christ. And I think also, the other thing I've put there, is use your imagination. You know, it's getting into somebody else's world. Now, you're never going to see it the way they see it. You cannot, as I think the Indian proverb says, walk in somebody else's moccasins. But you can at least try to hear what they say and imagine it for yourself. It's part of identification. It's part of being alongsideness. And actually, the whole congregation can do this. We did it in our church where we looked at the front of the church and said, right, imagine coming into the church as, and we chose various groups. It was mum with kids, old person, somebody in a wheelchair, somebody blind, what have you. And the result of that congregation is we've now redesigned the front of our church. And I actually got people to imagine what it was like to be somebody else rather than themselves. Because it's an exercise in sharing in the body of Christ. Yeah, and if they got things wrong, somebody says, well, actually, it's not like that. But that was fine. You've got to step out of yourself. I think that's one of the issues. You've got to step out of your own comfort zone and what you know. So that was to do with changing my attitudes. I'm very, very far from there. But that's part of my story so far. Change the culture of your church. If you're in the preaching ministry, do some preaching. The John Hall stuff's great. I didn't quite preach it straight, but you've got the basics of several sermons in that book. And you know, if people hear from the pulpit something that relates to their experience, then God is relevant to them. And it's important that everybody in our congregation hears stuff from the pulpit that's relevant, directly relevant to them. And if it's not part of my experience, I need to make it part of my experience somehow. So yes, it needs to be preached. Even do special services. Now, I know there is a Disability Sunday every year. I think this has sort of got a bit of a mixed reputation, really. I've never done disability, or I might have done it once. I did it once. This is the problem. I've got members of my congregation here. So if at any point they sort of shout, rubbish, you know, I'm embellishing things. The one service I did do, which wasn't a Disability Sunday service, but was actually after I'd written my dissertation, was I removed all the books. This is an idea a friend of mine gave me. Says, right, people come into church, there's nothing printed. There's nothing on the OHP, there's no notices, there's no hymn books. You can have Braille if you want. And you try singing Meekness and Majesty when you don't have the words in front of you. We sang the third verse twice. Second time, I think, was in reverse order. Very curious experience. Because people suddenly found themselves excluded by the culture of what was going on. And the church remembers that service because it made a difference. And in a sense, to change the culture of the church, you've got to get people to realise that the way we do church is exclusive. And to make that part of a community experience rather than just me or other individuals banging on about it. So that worked well. It doesn't always work well. We did have a Disability Sunday. Somebody else led it. I'm sorry, Trev, I'm going to tell this story against you, but it's funny. Trev is our pianist, and so he's on the piano because he doesn't read dots, he just makes it up, and he's wonderful. But he decided to teach the congregation a song. And so he went through the song, and somebody said, how do we know we'd come in? He says, I'll nod my head. A loud, sarcastic voice from the back of the congregation said, that'll be helpful. Which just goes to show that even the best of us get it wrong. Even the best of us, you know, forget, don't think, run on assumptions. Use Bible study materials. There's stuff out there, you can develop your own. The Baptist Union, one of the things we have as Baptists is an idea called five core values of a Baptist church. One of those is being an inclusive community. You know, whether you go for the other ones, I think there's suffering, mission, worshipping, I can't remember the four. Say again? Sacrificial, thank you. But the inclusive community is a really good study. You know, so do Bible studies and get people discussing and thinking and sharing together. It's got to be a group exercise. If it's just somebody from the front, it's not going to work. Get people involved and thinking for themselves. And then in terms of one of the big things about, for us, visually impaired in church, is the word can't. Have you encountered that one? Can't. Or they can't do that. No, we couldn't ask them to do that. My piano teacher said there's no such word as can't. It's either impossible or it's hard work, but there's no such word as can't. We nominated one of our blind ladies to the diaconate about a year or two after I came. And we had people sort of say, oh, but she can't be a deacon because she can't serve communion, and she can't welcome at the door, and she can't read the minutes of the deacon's meetings. She got in, and you know what? She welcomed at the door, and she served communion, and she actually revolutionized the way we did deacon's meetings. Because any of you who do meetings know that for a meeting to be successful, it's got to be well prepared. Well, her presence forced us to prepare the meetings. So we had to have this rule that all minutes, reports and everything else had to be on email with everybody by the Sunday before the deacons' meeting. Because we could not just turn up on the day and photocopy stuff and hand it out. And it meant our meetings went far smoother. And she always came prepared, having read everything. So be prepared to be changed for the better as you include people in the life and service of the church. We have one blind guy who does the books. And because we're a church that has pews, and visually impaired people say pews are great because they're always in the same place. You know where they are. You walk into church, you run your finger along the back, and that's where I sit. And so he knows it's three steps from the pew he sits in back to where the books are. He knows the layout of the shelves, and so he stands there, he serves the books out, and at the end, he feels his way along the pews, collects up the books, and takes them back completely independently. No such word as can't. And that's one of the things that individually we need to challenge. You know, when somebody is suggested for a piece of service or something like that, don't think, oh, we can't ask them. No such word as can't. The actual alternative is, are they called? If they're called, how's God going to allow us to make this happen? And that's the difference, and it's a different thinking. It's a less lazy thinking, to be honest, and that's why it's hard. Be patient, but be firm. One, with people with patronising attitudes, because they're on a learning path. And I know Jesus was very unfirm, was very firm, with some of the scribes and Pharisees and people in power. But I think for most people, they just don't understand. And so it's just a case of little challenges. Don't let them get away with it, but don't bawl them out either. So be very firm with the patronising attitudes and just point them out, because people don't realise they're being patronising usually. Be firm with people who don't get it. And sometimes that means just leaving them to it, but just repeating, later stage, no, we can do this. And again, that's part of the culture of imagining and reading and preaching and Bible study. And be patient but firm with angry disabled people who are angry with good reason, but who want things to move quickly. You will not have been in church more than about a year before you realise that churches don't move quickly. Somebody once described the process of leading a church to me as like trying to move jellyfish with a power hose. It's so delicate and it's so difficult. And we all want the pace of change to go zip. But actually, in many ways, that's able-bodied thinking, if I may say that. You know, we don't want things that are going to take ages. We don't want things that are going to go work. We just want to go for the success story straight away. That, to me, is not the body of Christ. I was at retreat Swanwick last week, and Roy Searle from the Northumbria community came and led the retreat for us. He was president of the Baptist Union for a year and went round and was entertained by lots of different mission statements, you know, many of whom are to serve, to evangelize the world, to la la la. And he says the one he liked best was a little church which had a placard in its foyer that said, "Plodding hopefully in the right direction." So the pace of change may well be slow, but plod, hopefully, in the right direction. And finally, I just encourage you to do it. It does include being more organised, and I fall down on this time and again. I like doing liturgies, but I rarely prepare my services before a Friday, before the Sunday. And by the time I've done a liturgy, it's too late to ask Torch to braille it. I need to be more organised. I was supposed to give these wonderful ladies a script, so they knew what I was going to say rather than having to worry. I didn't get the script done. It changes the practice, because actually I've taught myself to preach without notes. So I'm much happier preaching without notes. What do I need to do notes for? Well, sometimes you need to do notes. It does take more work. You will get less done. But it's important. Be prepared to change things to accommodate differing needs. But don't go for the lowest common denominator. When I first sort of realised that I had a load of visually impaired, I thought, right, well, I can't do anything visual, was my first reaction. And then I thought, what if there's a deaf person in the church? That means I can't do anything audio either. So we're into tactile worship. Might do wonders for my congregation, but anyway. You can't do that. And in the same way, actually, you can't do an all-age worship that is going to entertain everybody 100% all of the time. What we do by the grace of God as a community of God is recognise that some things will be for us. And some things, by the grace, we may just have to let go and say, well, that's going to bless somebody else. And as a minister and as somebody who leads worship, I need to try and make sure there's something in every service for everyone. But it's also partly about the culture. These lovely ladies here are making it inclusive for people with hearing impairments by doing signing. My congregation, and this is something I inherited, I didn't engender this. My congregation, whenever I put a picture up on PowerPoint, you hear this whispering campaign. Because what's going on is the people sitting next to a visually impaired person are saying, now what's happening now is, we have puppet shows in our church, and there's this running commentary the whole time, going on about what the puppets are doing and what they look like. And that's what we need to do. Maybe to let go of some of the sort of quieter aspects of our church so that people can be included. So don't go for the lowest common denominator. Do varied worship and hit everybody at some level. You could say the same about learning styles, you know. You could say the same about all sorts of different things. We need things that match as wide a variety as possible. And let's enjoy the variety, yeah? We've got huge variety in church. Let's just enjoy the variety and appreciate it, even if it doesn't touch us. Yes, going back to changing things, obviously with the legislation in 1995 and subsequently, many churches have had to adapt their buildings so that we've got disabled access. We have to change things. We put hearing loops in and we put other things in to make it more accessible. But actually the more important, or the more difficult things to do are changing the structure of the way we do things. Yeah, and it is making materials available in good time so that people can access them. Making sure people are included in every aspect. We're still doing our building project and we've got one of our visually impaired people on the building project team. Because it's important that voice is heard. So it's all that sort of thing. And as I said, be prepared for things to go better. Okay, don't go something, oh, this is going to be more work, yuck. Actually, you will do things more efficiently in many ways because you're doing them properly, first off. I think final thing I would say, from my own experience, if you're going to do this, which I believe you are because you're here, be prepared for a lot of hard work. And be prepared to constantly fail. I feel a charlatan up here because the trouble with doing seminars like this is people assume you know what you're talking about and that you're somehow an expert in the field. I spend more time now aware of what I've not done properly than I am of what I have done properly. But I was really encouraged by John Nordy. I spoke to him at coffee and he says, you know, but we've got things wrong in this conference. You know, and if John's got things wrong, I feel much better. So be prepared to fail, but don't give up. You know, if you don't have a direct connection with a disability, this is an exercise of constantly stepping outside your comfort zone. Constantly having to make that thought, I need to think about that, because it doesn't come naturally. It's constant effort, and you will often get it wrong, and you'll often find yourself going, oh, idiot. But the task is imperative. And we have no excuse. But through all this, be prepared to meet God. God comes to us as a disabled God, as a blind God, as a deaf God, as a God whose power was shown ultimately in his weakness. Wow. All yours.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Nick. Real good message, real pragmatic approach, and bang on time as well to boot. So really appreciate that. And I'm glad he mentioned this at the beginning and also alluded to it at the end. There's a phrase that I use There are really no experts. There are just various elements of expertise. And each person here has got different expertise to bring. You know, it's not about looking to the experts, because I don't think there are. We're all learning. It's a constant, you know, disciple means learner. I think we are all learning. And so, you know, well, I think there's no experts. We all have expertise to bring to this subject and others. I'd like to open out to the floor. If there are questions, please just, if you can, raise your hand. We'll try and get a mic to you. And then we'll, thanks, great, Nick. And we'll try and take some questions.
Thank you. I just, it's not so much a question, but a comment to say thank you very much for being honest and saying about failing. I have one, at the moment, this is at the moment, I hope for more, one visually impaired guy in our congregation who's been losing his sight over years, and he constantly moans, but doesn't want to be singled out as the blind guy in the congregation. Just to give you an example, we did a darkness into light service, as we do every year in church, and everybody came into church in darkness. I mean, there were little lights on here and there, and he came in and went, "There's no lights in here, it's blooming dangerous." And I said, "Well, people will appreciate how you feel." "No, they won't. It's just dangerous. You could trip over everything." And I had, really, I have to say, with all honesty, I'd kind of given up doing anything to help him, because he doesn't read Braille. He doesn't want anything special, because he can enlarge things on his computer. Yeah. He doesn't want me to send that to him, because that's picking him out. That's singling him out as somebody who has different needs. But I'm going to keep going with him because he's angry. He's obviously angry about what's happening in his life.
Yeah.
And thank you, because you've really encouraged me, because I did kind of think, oh, blow, you know, it's too much hard work. But I will keep going. So thank you. Thank you for your honesty.
Thank you for that. That was a lovely comment. I think partly, I mean, yes, the chap's obviously got his own grief issues going on. But it's also partly about, we have to change the culture so that people don't feel special in that sense. You know, that this is something we just do. You know, I'd love to get the church to the point where, you know, everybody, we always have a sign of whether there's anybody deaf in or not, sort of thing, because it's just what we do. You know, we always have the stuff out on Braille and things because it's just what we do. And then people who come in don't feel they're being made a special case of, because that's not including. Yeah, okay.
Hi, thank you for what you said. I have a sister who was born deaf, and so I have a little bit of insight into deaf culture. There is a movement among the deaf to avoid any treatment of the condition of deafness, I mean with implants and so on, which is possible for some people, on the grounds that it would deny them the right to their own culture. Obviously you can communicate with people who are really deaf, not just the hard of hearing. My sister is deaf, not hard of hearing. You can communicate with them, but is there any specifically Christian value that you would bring to bear on the situation where deaf people, say, have a deaf child, and treatment for the child's deafness is possible, and they do not want it, because that situation has arisen?
Any ethics experts here?
Ask the deaf people themselves.
Can we have a response to that from a deaf?
Please, yes.
I'm deaf myself, and I foster deaf children. And I've had a deaf child with an implant, and I've had deaf children with hearing aids. And I think the deaf community is changing, and they are realising that implants are just hearing aids that are just inside the skull. I think the biggest problem is hearing people's attitudes to the deaf in relation to engaging with them in communication. For example, I'm profoundly deaf, and lots of people come and sit in church, and they all look at me and want to pray for me for my deafness, and maybe my back's the problem, you know. And, you know, I'm quite happy to have prayer, whatever, but when I come to church, I just want to switch off and be quiet. And people don't realise that. You know, I'm happy being deaf. You know, if I want to become hearing, my relationship with deaf community would change. So, really, as a deaf Christian, you know, I need to outreach to other deaf people.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think Trevor had a question down here, and then we'll come to Suzelle, just had a question as well. So,
okay. Can I just come on to that? You asked about questions of ethics, and I come at this because I'm a child protection lawyer,
right.
And so it's sort of in my field. And the one thing I would say is the first question that immediately clicked in mind is, whose rights are we talking about? Mm. It's all very well talking about the rights of the parents and the culture, the preferred culture of the parents, but the child can be bicultural in many spheres of life. People are bicultural. And one always has to put the interest of the child first in my submission. And that's the way I would approach it. But I'd like to be much more positive, please, also. I think I didn't need to put that point. We're blessed in our church with a reader who used to be the chairman of the Disability Rights Commission. And one of the people he worked with was a lady who was disabled with learning disability. First of all, it was wonderful, he said, that she regularly threw back documents and said, "You're not doing your job properly, I can't understand this." Mm-hmm. And that was terrific. He really, you know, he loved her feistiness with that. And the second is, she absolutely insisted on being called disabled, because she said, "I am disabled by the way you treat me. And if I get away from that, we lose what you're doing to me." So although my first comment may suggest that I was being a little harsh towards deaf parents who value their culture, and I don't dissent from, you know, I don't withdraw the important point there, but nevertheless, the disability point is about not what, it's not about the condition, it's about the treatment, because if we do our Christian job correctly, we include everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for that contribution. Great. So Trevor was next early, before, and then Suzelle down here. So can we just...
Just to encourage the first person with the question. You know, being partial, you've got the two extremes. If you can't see a thing, then you're aware of what's happening. If you're fully sighted, you know where you are, you know where the boundaries is. But in the middle, when you get a lot of people with varying sight, which can happen. Now the question I'm going to put to Nick is, how do you think you'll cope with that in maybe 5 years' time?
You're not staying if I don't cope with it in 5 years' time. To be honest, I've no idea. You know, I think I keep doing what's in front of me, you know, and I think the point at which I find something obvious that I should have done and hadn't seen, then, oh, that's another thing I'll stick in and I'll start doing it. You know, it's just a gradual learning curve. I'm not going to beat myself up over things I get wrong, because, you know, I know I'll get things wrong, but, you know, I will try and learn and do better.
Hi, can everyone hear me okay? Please excuse the hissing, which is my ventilator. I'll say that because you need to excuse my pauses as well. Nick, I'd like to thank you particularly for your checking assumptions point. I think that I, as a somewhat aging disabled activist, read your notes before you started speaking. And a couple of things jumped out at me, and my assumptions came to the fore. I think you've dealt with them, but if I could mention them and then ask another question. The first thing that jumped out at me was, don't leave disability issues to the disabled or disabled people,
yes,
whichever you prefer. But the the point about that bullet point for me is that obvious, as I'm sure you recognise, disabled people are the experts in what our needs are. And yes, don't always go to disabled people just to check out disability issues, but include them, as you, I'm sure you do, as partners.
Whole life.
And I think that's the liberation theology point. And the second bit, and I think you covered it, was the special services bit. Clearly the word, I think many people here will recognise, the word special in the first place tends to raise hackles a wee bit, for lots of reasons.
Maybe unusual.
I think you covered the ambivalence which you have about those kind of services. The question I had related to your example, your illustration of taking a congregation to the front door of your church and saying, imagine you're X, Y, or Z, how would you find entering this church? Write your experiences down, tell them to another person. That, although I think you handled it really well, to me says something that I've come through 20 years ago from being a disability awareness trainer to a disability equality trainer. Now, the difference between those, I would say that what you did in that exercise is disability awareness training.
Okay.
It doesn't, unless you follow it through, lead to a disability equality awareness. Sometimes a flaw in disability awareness training is that the person being trained is left with a sense of, God, how awful this is. How awful it must be to be a wheelchair user, a blind person. It doesn't give a holistic sense of that person's experience, which is usually not negative on the whole. Just like your response to that.
Yes, certainly. Thank you for that. I think in the context of the exercise we were doing, people with disabilities were just one of a number of groups that we were considering. And as I said, it was, you know, mother with small kids and a buggy, young couple in town. So in that sense, I hope I didn't single out people with disabilities. Just think of a number of different groups. And I did deliberately ask people to think of a group that they were not, because for me that's part of changing the culture, is you've got to spend time thinking about, you know, what it might be like. I do take your comment, and it's absolutely true that if we do nothing but focus on people with disabilities in terms of their disabilities, then that does you a huge injustice. To a certain extent, I feel that we're in a sort of transition phase, a sort of a hinterland, in that sometimes things have to get some attention to change the culture before we can establish a new norm. And we're not always going to get it right. But sometimes I think, you know, you do have to raise awareness of certain things, and the justice issues, and it is a justice issue, primarily, and make that point so that people actually think it and it gets down to a transformation level. But I think you don't want to spend too long there, because it then does damage and you need to move on. Yeah.
Just last question at the back. Had his hand up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nick, for your session. I really enjoyed that. I was in two minds as to whether to go to another of the sessions. So one or two which really appealed to me intellectually. But I'm glad I stayed here in this particular seminar. Thank you for that.
And it didn't appeal to you intellectually, I take it.
The title I'm talking about. But the question I'm asking is, at your church at Market Harbour, you seem to be talking about a disability-friendly church, from which you got quite excited about and was able to share with us.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you find that other people are coming in from outside to your church because of your friendliness in this way? Thank you.
It's very difficult to sort of talk up your church. Well, actually, it's not difficult, but it's sometimes quite dishonest. The church does seem to be a welcoming church, and again, that's a heritage that was there before I arrived, in that most of the people I welcome into membership, when I say, why do you want to be a member of the church, they nearly always say, because it was so welcoming. I've not had many people say, oh, because it's so disability-friendly. There's one or two people that I know have come because they found it included, but I mean, those are visually impaired. I do wonder if we had, I've got one deaf lady in church who watches me like a hawk when I'm doing the prayers, and if I cover my mouth when I'm praying, as you sometimes do in all the spirit of the moment, she puts her hand up and does waves like that, because she's part lip reading me, you see. Whether, you know, deaf people would find us as welcoming, whether somebody with learning difficulties would find us as welcoming, I don't know. The local evangelical church seems to be very welcoming for people with learning difficulties. I think you are a learning stage at all sorts of levels, and it's just, you just have to keep at it, really. And I think to try and pat myself on the back of saying, yes, we're a welcoming church, is a big mistake. We've got a long, long, long way to go as a kingdom of God.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We have come to the end. We've slightly overrun our time. Thank you to all for your involvement. Thank you especially to Nick for leading us. The next session will be starting in the main hall. Continue to have a good afternoon. Bless you all. Thank you.